Big topics, big ideas, big sky, Montana talks.
To some friends, and they were like, what are you going to ask the Secretary of State Jacobson when she gets on? And I started rattling off about 30 questions just right off the top of my head, you know, kind of starting with what's the latest going on at the Secretary's office? What have they been working on? Are we still seeing the number of new business filings that we're used to seeing? And a whole host from there as well. Let me just get through a quick couple of stories here I wanted to get through. Well, it looks like the producer is working with the Secretary's office to try to get that working. But apparently, you're seeing in Gallatin County, similarly to Yellowstone County, a very high number of ballot rejections because people are forgetting to put their birth year on the ballots. And actually, if we can get the Secretary of State on the show, this would be a good one to talk to her about. This says, this is a story from KBZK. It says, with the November 4th election fast approaching, and for this election, voters have to add their birth year along with their signature on mail-in and absentee ballots. A volunteer with the Gallatin County Elections Department said she's making sure the birth year section is filled out before ballots are dropped off. That's what we're checking for, to make sure that happens before it's put in the ballot box. So I guess what I would say to folks out there is, if you put your birth year on your ballot, you're probably good. If you forgot to, I'd get down to the elections office here sort of as soon as you can, make sure that, you know, that's going to get your ballot counted. This new addition is part of Montana's House Bill 719, which was passed in this just recent legislative session. It requires voters provide both their signature and their birth year on their ballots. The Gallatin County Clerk and Recorder, Eric Semerad, said he's seen an increase in rejected ballots. 20% of ballots have been returned. Just over 4% have been rejected. It's something voters have never had to do before, so they're not looking for it. You know, it's and it's pretty obvious, though, when you look at there's a big, huge blank spot for the birth year. And so and it's on the instructions. It's all spelled out there. So it's really not that difficult to comply with. He said some people are forgetting to add their birth year. Some are intentionally not including it on their ballot. Now, I think I know some folks who sort of intentionally didn't include it. I'm not necessarily sure why. I know you've got to give them your birth date and your birth year when you register. Some people are a little offended that, why do I have to prove again who I am and then I'm giving you the correct info? But those have been very few. So Semerad said there's a way to fix it. There are ways to resolve it using a form. We can accept that form via email, so it's a fairly simple process. So yet again, voting in Montana, very simple, even with the new requirements in place. Hopefully we'll have the situation here fixed at the studio coming up more right after this.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With cloudiness and some breaks of sunshine today, we'll see a few light showers possible early on yet in some parts of the area. Otherwise, high temperature readings from the mid-50s in Bozeman to the low 60s in the Billings vicinity. For tonight, with variably cloudy skies, overnight lows from around the upper 30s, and then we'll see partly sunny skies Wednesday. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
This is House Call for Health. Long-term melatonin use may be linked to heart problems. A study that's to be reported next Monday at the American Heart Association found that adults who have insomnia and have been using melatonin for a year or more have a 90% higher chance of heart failure. They're also almost 3.5 times more likely to visit a hospital for heart failure. The study uses data from almost 131,000 people who had chronic insomnia, and nearly half of them took melatonin for a year or more. Melatonin occurs naturally in the body to assist with regulating a person's sleep-wake cycle. And while the study featured users who were prescribed melatonin for their sleep issues, melatonin is available over-the-counter and often is not reflected in medical records. The supplement has been believed to be a safe sleep aid, but these preliminary findings may prove otherwise. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
A lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, there we go. Now we got the mic on. I've been sitting here talking for the last 20 seconds. No mic going. We got it on now, though. I'm still working through a couple of snafus here with the situation with trying to get a guest on the show. So there's a couple of other stories I'll just kind of run through here. Actually, you know what? There was a couple of messages I had coming in. Okay, let me get to these. Right on, John. Appreciate you guys sending in these messages, by the way. Sorry, it's taking me a few minutes here to get to them. Right on, John says, David, did you travel in the backwoods rural areas on your trip, or was it fully work back in the day we call trans men girly men? When did they rename this? I don't know when they renamed that one. I would guess here relatively recently. No, when I went down to Argentina, spent most of my time in Buenos Aires, just because I was operating with a broken arm at the time. I would have done more of the backwoods rural areas that you're talking about there. Apparently, lots of folks go down to Argentina to hunt as well. Had a couple of friends sort of commenting that they like to hunt. Another message from Cameron in Billings says, but none of those numbers or research matter because of the appealing to authority fallacy, right? Doesn't matter what scientists say. You're confusing, I think, Cameron. I think you're confusing the difference between an actual study and an actual survey versus the logical fallacy we discussed earlier about an appeal to authority. Now, if I were to say, it's obvious that, you know, the number of people identifying as transgender has gone down 50% in the last 2 years. And if my source for that was, oh, well, an expert said it, so therefore it's true. That would be a logical fallacy, but that's not what I said. I said, you've got multiple studies and surveys coming out that show the number of people that are identifying as transgender going way down, like 50% down in just a 2-year period. That is quite a bit of a different situation and is not an appeal to authority. That's actually an appeal to evidence and logic, which is literally the exact opposite of a logical fallacy. When you actually use evidence and logic to back up your point and support it, that's actual logic. That's supportable. That's not a logical fallacy. When you just appeal to authority, which is what Democrats do on all of their issues, it doesn't matter what the issue is if it's global warming, if it's any of these other things, they always just appeal to authority. And worse than that, they'll actually try to shut you down if you don't have their little credentials that they want you to have. And so, no, like using evidence and logic is the opposite of a logical fallacy. That's what conservatives, that's what Republicans do. It's the Democrats that are oftentimes using not just that logical fallacy of an appeal to authority, but lots of different logical fallacies. It's amazing, actually, if anybody's taken logic like I have. I took logic at the University of Montana when I was in college there. There's a philosophy class called logic. I don't know if it's philosophy 101 or 201 or whatever it is, but I would encourage people to do it because you sit there, you listen to these Democrats, these left-wingers a lot of time, and most of what they're saying is just straight-up logical fallacies, just one logical fallacy after another. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, just give a little bit of a preview here about what is the other big election here in the state. in the country, which is in New Jersey. So we talked a little bit about the New York City race. There's a big one here in Virginia as well between, I don't know, Virginia, I think, has this weird rule where a governor cannot run twice, because I was sort of assuming that their current governor was going to be running, but he's not. It's actually Winsome Earl Sears against Abigail Spanberger, the Democrat. In New Jersey, this one is very interesting. Some people think the Republican actually might have a chance here in New Jersey. New Jersey hasn't voted for a Republican president in more than 30 years, nor a Republican senator in more than 50, and yet its governor's seat has flipped back and forth throughout. And you've got currently you've got a Democrat governor, Phil Murphy, in place in New Jersey right now. It's his second term is coming to an end today, and you've got a GOP candidate, Jack Citarelli. He's come very close to winning the governorship last time around. The golden rule of New Jersey politics since the 80s has been that the Golden State or the Garden State backs a governor opposed to the party holding the White House. And for this reason, it's the Democrat Mikey Sherrill, former Navy helicopter pilot who represents New Jersey's 11th congressional district. He's leading in the polls. And then you've got this Jack Citarelli. And so what everybody's sort of wondering is which sort of political movement is going to have the day, have more of a sway in New Jersey? Is it going to be sort of their history of bouncing back and forth between Democrat governor, Republican governor? Is it going to be more along the lines of, you know, hey, we've got, we like to go for a governor that's against the party in the White House? Politico quotes one of their people as saying, New Jersey's election, like Virginia's, will be read as an auger for the midterms and a test of whether Trump's better-than-expected 6-point loss of the state in 2024 was a fluke or a sign of a long-term realignment of urban Hispanic voters. So again, New Jersey, Donald Trump did better than expected 6-point loss. Was that a fluke or was that a sign of a longer-term realignment of urban Hispanic? The fact that Donald Trump is doing so well amongst Hispanics, amongst blacks, amongst other minorities is a great sign for everything and for the future, and super excited about that. We'll be right back. This is David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint.
Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. Will your right to carry your firearm extend to public buses and trains? Both the Second Amendment Foundation and the Firearms Policy Coalition want the U.S. Supreme Court to get involved in a case out of Chicago that originally successfully challenged Illinois law banning firearms on public transit. The case was first filed in a federal district court in 2022, and that court ruled the Illinois ban violated the Second Amendment, failing the Supreme Court's Bruin test for historical analogs in gun laws. But the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that ruling, saying trains and buses are sensitive places and can be made gun-free zones. If the Supreme Court overturns the Seventh Circuit, similar bans against carrying firearms legally on public transportation in other places, such as New York, Boston, and Philadelphia, could also be undone. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. I tell you what, we get some great guests on this show. We have some great sidekicks that join us on this show. And we've got friends inside the Trump administration and on Capitol Hill that will join us on this show. But I'll tell you what, the best part of Montana Talks, your phone calls, the chance to get to hear from people all across Montana and for you to be heard all across Montana. Keep your phone calls coming with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard across the state.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by nfamilyfire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
American.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordland.
At Angus Convention in Kansas City this past weekend, Shepherd Montana's Claire Mernon was crowned as Miss American Angus 2026.
I've dreamed of wearing this red jacket for as long as I can remember. And so having the privilege of being able to do it is just a very big honor. And I'm so humbled and blessed that I get to serve this year. To be an advocate for the Angus breed and really be a representative for them. So that includes attending stock shows, sales, and different events put on through the American Angus Association and its entities, including Certified Angus Beef, and more specifically, the American Angus Auxiliary that mainly sponsors this event. And so that includes things like going and visiting ranches through Certified Angus Field Days, Certified Angus Beef Field Days, and even looking at attending stock shows, especially like Louisville and even more like Denver, so many of those different events.
Congratulations to this outstanding young ag leader. And I should also mention, you may have heard Claire's voice last week on our programming, as she is also the state FFA president for Montana. We caught up with her while she was at the National FFA Convention as well. So a very busy week for her last week, but a big congratulations to the Shepherd Montana graduate and a big tip of the hat to her folks for raising an outstanding young woman. I'm Lane Nordland.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, this is incredible. Hey, and in fact, yeah, big friends here back. Senator Steve Daines just came in and said hello here once again. But what a lineup we've got for you here. Already this morning, we've caught up with pretty much our entire congressional delegation. Congressman Troy Downing is going to join us next hour of this show. But then we're getting other friends that are coming in. Senator Steve Daines brought in Senator Kevin Cramer out of North Dakota. And now we've got the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, Chairman Bruce Westerman, a congressman out of Arkansas. Mr. Chairman, great to have you on Montana Talks. What an honor. I understand you're the only forester in the U.S. House of Representatives. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's been that way since I got there, Aaron, about 10 years ago. But I love Montana. I was just out there a couple of weeks ago. Governor Jim Forte had an energy conference. And great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
In fact, we've got Jesse Ramos here with Americans for Prosperity Montana. Jesse, as I understand it, you were one of the keynote speakers at that energy conference along with Chairman Westerman. What stood out to you from Chairman Westerman's remarks, or what would be a question you'd want to start with here this morning?
Yeah, Chairman Westerman, good to see you again, or good to talk to you again. It was great seeing you out in Montana. And I have to be honest with you, I was shocked to learn that Arkansas was an even bigger timber state than Montana was.
Yeah, Arkansas's got a lot of timber and a lot of timber infrastructure and mills here, and we don't have near as much federal land as Montana does, so we're able to actually harvest our timber and process it. But ironically, I'm getting ready to go in to meet with a group here in my hometown of Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's the federal timber purchasers organization, and a lot of folks from Montana and the West that are here in my hometown today to talk about federal timber purchasing. And even though we have one of the smaller national forests, the Ouachita Forest, which is here around Hot Springs, is usually the most productive in cutting timber, which is a bit ironic, but I think it goes back to the fact that we've got the mill infrastructure here, yep, and timber management is widely accepted, and we just don't get the protests and the holdups when the Forest Service in this area puts out a management plan or a timber sale, and people see the benefits of it. A lot of outdoorsmen here, like in Montana, people love to hunt, they love to fish, and they realize that when you do timber management, you get great wildlife habitat. Another interesting fact about Arkansas is the first European explorers that came through here said you could ride a horse at full gait through these forests, and the forests were also filled up with herds of buffalo and elk, which we don't have that. We've got elk coming back, not the eastern elk that were originally here, but this land here in the middle part of the country used to support a diverse range of wildlife, and if we would get back to managing the forest like it was back then, we would have even more wildlife again. Even though we've got a lot of wildlife, I don't want it to sound like we don't have plenty of deer and turkeys and other critters, but we've got opportunity to make even better improvements on it.
That's such a great point about the wildlife habitat. There's a film that's been traveling the state right now called The Real Yellowstone, and that's one of the points he's emphasizing there for sportsmen in particular is if we better manage our federal lands, if we better manage our so-called public lands, we'll have better wildlife habitat. That's why a lot of the wildlife ends up on private land. It's because they better manage private land, so they have better habitat. So if we better manage our federal lands, we can have better wildlife habitat. That's really a big part of, you know, earlier this hour, we caught up with Senator Tim Sheehy from Montana. And, you know, he's, as an aerial firefighter, is working on fixing our forests in the United States Senate. You're taking the lead in the United States House. In fact, I think it's your legislation, if I remember right, Chairman Bruce Westerman.
Yeah, we originated that bill in the House in the Natural Resources Committee, passed it last fall.
All right, are we live? All right, we are live. It's David Noble back live. Huge apologies to the listeners and to Secretary of State Christy Jacobson. We're trying to get some things worked out here in the studio, so big apologies to Secretary of State Christy Jacobson. She was supposed to be on here during the 7 o'clock hour. I know that she's busy. She's got a busy schedule, so very much appreciate her being willing to come on and take messages and calls and questions from me and everything like that. Hopefully, if we get this situation figured out, I'd be happy to try to get her back on another time. If you want to send in a message on the Montana Talks app, you know, we'll try to get to that. Couple other stories I wanted to get to. The U.S. Census Bureau's new annual data, over 40% of U.S. owner-occupied housing units are now mortgage-free. This is out of the Big Sky Business Journal. A new high up from 39.8% in 2023. The portion of homeowners with no mortgage ticked up almost every year since 2010 when it was 32.8%. Which, by the way, actually, I don't know if folks were on X or certainly not getting the X algorithm that I'm getting, but boy, my X feed was kind of filled up with nothing but debate about this guy that had posted how he paid off his mortgage, and he posted his zero balance on his mortgage, and it showed he had a 2.65% mortgage rate, and he paid it off. And of course, all the geniuses out there were just totally criticizing him, saying, why would you pay off a mortgage at 2.65%? Of course, they apparently don't understand the psychological impact of that, the ability to reduce a risk if you pay off a mortgage like that. But that was a huge debate online. The fact that over 40% of all housing units are now mortgage free it's quite a lot. I mean, that's, you're approaching almost half now without a mortgage. The demographics of older homeowners is most likely to be the reason for the increase as Americans live longer and the massive baby boomer generation ages into their senior years. The U.S. population has skewed older. According to an analysis, 54% of U.S. homeowners who are mortgage-free are 65 years or older. People age 65 and older make up more than a third of all U.S. homeowners. Among those 65 and older, 64% own their primary homes free and clear. So, you know, interesting, there's a lot of stuff online as well about this sort of housing gap between the older generations and the younger generations. A lot of people, actually, I saw something just this morning, because there's a graph, you know, about the average age of, you know, first-time home buyers, different things like that. And then you look at these type of statistics about the elderly owning a lot more homes. And then a lot of people out there saying, hey, we've got to build more housing units. We have to build more housing units. And then other people were coming and saying, no, we're actually looking at a population collapse. We're going to have excess housing units very shortly because nobody's having enough babies. And so, folks, get out there, have babies, reproduce, multiply, as the word of the Lord says. Go forth and multiply. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
Mike Rowe here.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, it's David Noble. I am live. I don't know, can we get the Secretary of State's office to try one more time talking right now? And nothing. That's all right. We're just going to press on, folks, playing it by ear. As usual, we were talking about that mortgage story. We're going to move on from that one. I just saw a Bozeman Daily Chronicle literally just posted. Hundreds of ballots have been rejected in Gallatin County, where voters in Bozeman, Belgrade, and West Yellowstone are set to decide on new leaders and ballot initiatives. As of mid last week, election officials had rejected 5.5% of ballots turned in, significantly higher than the typical rejection rate of 1%. Most rejected ballots are missing the voter's birth year on the back of the envelope, which is now required under state law. The election is by mail only. No polling places open Tuesday. So this is for the Bozeman folks. The administrator there said that. Now I'm getting feedback on myself. Talk here. Mic check. Oh, there we go. All right, now we're good. And do we have the secretary potentially on? Secretary of State, can you hear me?
Good morning. Good morning, Montana. Good morning, David.
Secretary of State. So we'll just keep rolling along here. Most rejected ballots are missing the birth year. They do have, if you forgot to put your birth year on the ballot, you do have a chance to remedy the issue. Apparently until 5 p.m. Wednesday to do that. We actually had a Billings mayor candidate, Jennifer Owen, who I voted for, was in the studio yesterday saying the same thing about Yellowstone County, that folks have until 5 p.m. tomorrow to sort of fix this issue, remedy this issue that they're having with people forgetting to put the birth year on their ballot. This is Montana Talk, so we're gonna give that information out as much as possible. Here's another story I wanted to get to. Actually, I saw our Congressman Troy Downing. Just posted something. Congressman Troy Downing just posted. He says, we are now tied for the longest shutdown in U.S. history, 35 days. It's unconscionable that Democrats have let it go this long. Montana is projected to have lost $177 million in revenue. 14,000 federal workers are furloughed or unpaid. And small businesses face $12 million in delayed loans. It's time to open the government. You know, and I was watching, apparently Donald Trump did this lengthy 60 Minutes interview. I was actually watching it on YouTube, but Donald Trump was given the 60 Minutes interview, and they kept asking Trump, like, well, what's going to happen? What are you going to do? And Trump is just like, well, the Democrats are going to have to vote. A couple more U.S. senators, Democrat U.S. senators, are going to have to vote to reopen the government. That's the only way this is going to end. And then Trump again reminded the 60 Minutes interviewer, this is the Democrat shutdown. the Democrats are demanding things that the Republicans cannot do or support. And Trump, again, brought up that the Democrats, in order to open the government, in order to just allow the government to be open, the Democrats are demanding $1.5 trillion in new spending, which we can't afford and don't have and will cause inflation. And remember, inflation is the most insidious tax, and it hurts the poorest of the poor. That's what these Democrats, I mean, it's like I've been talking all show about how crazy it is to me that we actually have history to tell us what happens when you push these far left big government policies. Look at what happened in other countries. Look at what happened in Argentina when they did it. Look at what happened in a lot of these other communist countries, socialist countries. Look at what's going on in Europe, for example, with their, you know, I constantly am seeing stuff online about European wages and how much people in Europe are making. And it's actually quite shocking when it comes right down to it. Everybody kind of thinks of Europe as, oh, they're sort of on par with the U.S. in a lot of ways. Well, no, actually, they're not, especially when it comes to GDP per capita, wages, things like that. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why Europe cannot compete with the United States right now when it comes to AI, is they just don't have the ability to pay the AI workers what they're basically getting paid by the big U.S. tech companies. And so, you know, when you've got wages that low in Europe, and the wages in Europe are significantly lower than the wages in the U.S., that, of course, hurts the poorest of the poor. That hurts low-income people a lot. And it also prevents economic growth and from having the size of the pie grow overall. And so, you know, you see that stuff a lot. And the Democrats are just going to have to vote to reopen the government. And it seems to me that that is going to be the way that this ends. And, you know, it's actually kind of funny because I was asking some folks at the very, very beginning of this government shutdown, I asked some Democrats, hey, I want your prediction. And I don't want, you know, and I don't want your sort of what you hope will happen, or, you know, what you think should happen, or anything like that. What will happen? Objective analysis. How is this going to end? Because I, from the very beginning, I sort of have known that the Democrats are going to end up having to cave on this. The Democrats will cave, and they're going to have to vote. And, you know, the Democrats that I were talking to, they were saying, you know, the way that this is going to end is when the Republicans decide to come in and negotiate like normal with the Democrats. And I said, that's not going to happen. First of all, like, the Republicans, there's nothing to negotiate here. You know, it's like, if anything, the Republicans ought to be demanding more spending, because right now the actual CR does not involve any spending cuts. And you've got, it's crazy to see, you know, the Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, out there on the TV shows begging and pleading and fighting for to continued Biden era federal spending, deficit spending. So the Republicans in D.C. right now, and the Republican in the White House, right, are fighting tooth and nail to fund the federal government at Biden era spending levels. So it's like the Republicans are already sort of way to the left and way in favor of the Democrats on what they have passed. And the Democrats are demanding more. And I'm sitting here thinking we should be going the other way. We should, the Republican House should have passed a CR, quote unquote. I don't even know if they can do this. If a CR, if that means everything continues as usual, or if you can actually cut spending in a CR. Doesn't matter whether it's an omnibus or whatever. What the Republicans ought to be doing is passing bills to fund the government with a balanced budget. It's called a fiscal surplus. When countries like Argentina can have a fiscal surplus, there's no reason the United States can't have a fiscal surplus right now. Is it going to be painful? Yeah, it is painful. That's the problem with these Democrat policies, these socialist policies. Once they're in place, you get people reliant on them. You get people dependent on these policies and these issues and things like that. And it just becomes a big problem, because now it is painful to get people off of those programs. It is painful. And this, look at the entitlement programs in the U.S. These things have destroyed a big chunk of our economy and our culture and things like that. But nobody can get rid of any of this stuff because it is painful. And that was, frankly, you know, Javier Milei down in Argentina. He was looking at a tough midterm election because in order to bring down inflation, he did cause some pain. When you do massive cuts to federal spending, you do see people lose their jobs. You do see certain winners and losers, and they get all upset. And that sort of a thing is painful. And that's why there are difficulties winning elections when the people don't demand it. You know, what you saw down there was people were just so afraid of the socialists taking back over. And they knew that would cause another bout of hyperinflation, probably another government default, you know, more pain. And it was less sort of like voting in favor of, you know, fiscal sanity and fiscal surplus and things like, and more so just voting against the radical left because they're absolutely terrified of these Peronists taking back over. And so anyway, I read that Troy Downing tweet because everything you see out there, it's the Republicans pressuring the Democrats to reopen the government. And I always thought, you know, when the Republicans were in the minority in the U.S. Senate and they needed Republican votes to fund the government, I always thought if the Republicans said no, not unless they're spending cuts, that's a debate you take to the American people, and you win that debate because the American people do want spending cuts at the federal level. They don't want to take out more debt from China, put ourselves further into debt, cause more and more inflation. But the Democrats don't have a winning issue. The Democrats do not have a winning issue to take to the American people right now when it comes to what they're fighting for with this shutdown. They're fighting for subsidies to the insurance companies that will cause more and higher costs to the American health insurance consumer. They're fighting for illegal aliens. The Democrats can't go to the American people and win this debate, which is why you see the Republicans over and over again saying the Democrats need to vote to open the government. All right, we got a guest in studio, John Jackson, coming up right after this. This is David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
Fox Sports Update.
The Arizona Cardinals losing streak is over. Good morning, I'm Jared Max. Week 9 of the NFL season wrapped up in Arlington, Texas last night. The Cardinals held off the Cowboys.
And now Prescott is going to be sacked. Calais Campbell. Extra man on the rush, and how about Campbell? Take another one. Prescott just trying to buy time. Sweat chasing him. Downfield, jump ball picked off. Intercepted by Denzel Burke.
Last ditch effort by the Cowboys, snagged by the Cardinals on ESPN. Arizona beat Dallas 27-17. First win in 6 games for the Cardinals, who for the 3rd game in a row were quarterbacked by Jacoby Brissett. As starter Kyler Murray recovers from a foot injury, Brissett threw for 261 yards with touchdown passes to Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison Jr., who made a career-best 7 receptions for 96 yards. The Cardinals improved to 3-5, dropped the Cowboys to 3-5-1. Dak Prescott passed for 250 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 interception. The NFL trade deadline is today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. On the Stephen A. Smith Show Monday on Sirius XM, Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones said, "We certainly have made a trade, and we may make a couple more trades before that deadline." No news yet on the supposed Cowboys trade. Stay tuned. Victor Conti, the man who engineered the Balco performance-enhancing drug scandal that dealt steroids to athletes, died Monday at the age of 75.
Single digits on the game clock. Giannis with Nesmith switched out on him. Giannis with the back down. The paint away. The shot. It's good. Wiz Heroes have the shot clock. Giannis with the game winner.
FanDuel Sports Network, Wisconsin. Giannis Antetokounmpo's fadeaway jump shot at the buzzer lifted the Bucks over the Pacers 117-115. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With cloudiness and some breaks of sunshine today, we'll see a few light showers possible early on yet in some parts of the area. Otherwise, high temperature readings from the mid-50s in Bozeman to the low 60s in the Billings vicinity. For tonight, with variably cloudy skies, overnight lows from around the upper 30s, and then we'll see partly sunny skies Wednesday. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. I'll tell you what, we get some great guests on this show. We have some great sidekicks that join us on this show. And we've got friends inside the Trump administration and on Capitol Hill that will join us on this show. But I'll tell you what, the best part of Montana Talks, your phone calls. The chance to get to hear from people all across Montana and for you to be heard all across Montana. Keep your phone calls coming with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard across the state.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Oh, I thought we were doing an ad read right there. Okay, I guess we're live. It's me and your boy, John Jackson, on mic two over there. John, thanks for coming in.
Do you hear me? I'm gonna blow up smoke signals and do hand gestures on it. Do you got me?
I got you. And good thing they've got a couple of pros like me and you in here.
yeah. Here we are, the professionals, right?
The professionals. Yeah. So big election day here today, all across the country, including here in Montana, and you got the New York elections. You got New Jersey. I've been talking a little bit about that one, and then you got Virginia. So are you tracking all those?
Yeah, and they're just reporting now this morning that it sounds like they're doing a little bit of Arizona nonsense up there in Jersey. It sounds like they've got some of the voting machines in the red areas that have gone down this morning. You remember what they did in Maricopa County in Arizona?
It's always something with the machines going down or a burst pipe, maybe.
Oops. That's what everybody's saying. Everybody's saying it for a long time now. You listen to Hannity. Hannity's like all over this. He says, bank your vote. Get your vote in. A lot of people have that tradition. They want to go vote election day. Do not do that anymore because they pull these kind of shenanigans.
Yeah, and then you've got this new requirement here in Montana about putting your birth year on the ballot, and apparently folks are forgetting to do that, and so there's a bunch of people that probably need to go down to the elections office today or tomorrow and get their ballot in, especially if you're a conservative.
Well, if you're in a blue state, they could just cure that ballot, right, David? They could just look cure up it, yeah. your year of birth and write it in there.
So I wonder if you show up at like the elections office with like a trunk full of ballots, can you just say these are cured?
Yeah, look, we found these in this guy's back seat, right? Did you hear now there's not a place to go vote day of in person now. It's all mail in, right?
Right. Here in Montana, yeah, for this one. Which I don't even I mean I'm not in favor of that, frankly. Like, I don't think that all mail ballots is the way to go. A couple of reasons. Number one, it's not the most secure way of doing it. When you're just, and the way we do it, we just send out ballots. It's like they might as well fly a 747 over the city and just drop ballots out into the air. It's like dropping leaflets type of thing. You know, it's not secure.
If you made me king of the world, we would go back to 1985 voting. You vote day of, in person with an ID, period. And the only people that get mail is are our troops and our people stationed overseas.
Amen.
Everybody else, you either be here when it's time to vote or you don't get to vote.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that if you're going to actually show up on election day in person with your ID to vote, that means that you're invested a little bit into it. Yep. It takes a little bit of effort. The Democrats win when they get low effort, low information voters to vote. That's how the Democrats win.
Well, of course, you know what they're doing. That just like they did in the 2020 election, they're in rooms and nonprofits with massive amounts of fake ballots, just filling them out and dropping them in. And these mail-in votes, once you separate that ballot from the envelope, it's poof. It's like cracking an egg and stirring it. Boom. There's no more yolk. The yolk is gone.
Right. And then that's their excuse for not being able to, you know, investigate or recount or audit or anything like that.
Well, you remember those people during COVID that told you had to have a smartphone with your ID on there that showed you got the jab? Those very people tell you that it's racist to ask for voter ID at the polls, right? You can't. Oh my gosh, you can't have that.
Yeah, you know. So it made me wonder where. Why are the Democrats not out there saying that requiring you to write down your birth year is racist? Because that's the type of thing that Democrats do. That's racist to try to require people to write down their birth year.
Well, give it a minute. Our boy Fussy Bussy there will have a lawsuit. Him and his kids will have a lawsuit about that hair any day now.
Yeah, and of course, never mind the fact how racist it is for these Democrats to say, oh, so this minority group doesn't have an eye. This minority group can't write down their birth year. I mean, that's essentially what they're saying in a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's truly absurd.
Oh, everybody knows it's a lie. It's an open secret. Everybody knows it's because they want to cheat. That's why they're doing that.
That's true. More with John Jackson and David Noble for the 8 o'clock hour. We'll be right back.
People out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
My early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take,
but it gave my mom and me more time to plan together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
KBUL.